Good evening, everyone. I'm Tara Gentile, and this is our third and final Insight Intensive call. I've got three fresh new victims to put on the hot seat. I've got Kristen, Melissa, and Corinne, and we are going to get to all the hot, hot, hot business action in just a couple of minutes. First, I wanted to give you a little bit of housekeeping information. The first is that don't go away. Don't go away during the call because we are giving away two copies of the $100 Startup to two people who ask questions at the end of the call. Anyone can ask a question. I'll let you know when, and you can raise your hand and win a copy of the book. The other is that we do have a hashtag for tonight's call. So if you're on the Twitters, make sure you're using the hashtag BizInsight, BizInsight, all one word. So # BizInsight. And I do so appreciate when I see tweets on the hashtag because it lets me know what was super interesting to you. It lets me know maybe what questions you had or maybe what wasn't clear. Lets me know what maybe I need to write a blog post about in the future. So please, those tweets are much appreciated and they're super, super helpful for me. So anything you hear from the call that you have a question about, that you had an aha moment, something you found interesting, go ahead and tweet it out with the hashtag BizInsight, # BizSight. Other than that, the only other housekeeping thing is that everyone on the call is currently muted. So we have a nice quiet line for you to sit back and relax and enjoy the call. So you don't need to worry if there's barking dogs or screaming babies or screaming husbands, girlfriends, boyfriends, wives, brothers, whatever. just enjoy the call. Yeah, I think that's it. And I think I did that even faster than I did it last night. So yay. Yeah, so our three victims tonight are Kristen Noel, who is a trust tender and coach. We have Melissa Dinwiddie, who is a creativity coach, inspirationalist, and instigator. And we have Corinne Marasco, who is a grant writer and consultant. So, again, three very different businesses that you have a lot to learn from. Oh, I forgot the most important piece of housekeeping. Oh, no wonder it went so short. And that's the context for this call. On this call, you're going to hear very specific advice and insight and kind of intuitive guidings around three very different businesses. And most likely, those businesses are pretty darn different from your own. But what I've found in growing my own business and in working with, a whole host of clients is that often the biggest insights, the biggest aha moments come from hearing advice or ideas given to somebody else. Because we are all in our own little business bubbles. And when we're in that business bubble, it's really hard to get ideas. It's hard to use ideas. It's hard to see beyond what's right in front of our face. And so a call like this where you're getting ideas and insight into someone else's business who's completely different from your own can actually connect a lot of those and spark a lot of the synapses in your brain to get you thinking creative thoughts about your own business and your own business issues. So just be aware and open, even though these businesses are probably very different from your own. All right, and without further ado, I'm going to introduce our first victim, who is Melissa. Hey, Melissa.
Hey, Tara.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm so excited.
Yay, I'm excited too. So I have to say first that I've actually known Melissa now for 2 years since we were back in Third Tribe together way back when. And so I'm super excited that she decided to apply for one of these calls. And I think I've got some interesting insights to give you, Melissa. But first, let me introduce you to the world. So Melissa is Chief Inspirationalist and World Changer at melissadinwiddie.com. Don't worry, I will spell that out on Twitter afterwards. There she teaches women that they were made to create and that your creative gifts are not a matter of personal permission, but global need. So Melissa's goal for today's call is to figure out what projects to work on over the next 12 months and which to shelve. But before we move on to that goal, Melissa, I wanted to give you some serious kudos for something that you put on your application. And I think it's something that you can pat yourself on your back, on the back for, but it's something that everyone else on this call can learn from. You mentioned that you realize what you offer and what your heroes, your big business role models offer is the same caliber. That just because you're a few steps behind them in experience or, you know, promotional technique or list building, that it doesn't matter, and that you can really command the same price because you're offering the same thing. So it's not just about how big your tribe is, but really about what you have to offer. So you learn to recognize your heroes as your peers, and that is so, so important when it comes to positioning yourself in the market. So kudos to you, Melissa. Yay.
Thanks.
So, okay, so your main question, and I loved this. It was such a thoughtful question. It was, how can you create a set of buyers that creates community or a movement among themselves without it sucking up all your time? So, so thoughtful. Great question. So really, and that points back to the goal that you had for this call, too. If you want to know what projects to shelve and which to prioritize, obviously you need to prioritize the projects that have the ability to grow that community of loyal buyers, people who are part of your movement and not just hit or miss impulse shoppers that are here today, gone tomorrow. And I really want to hone in on that it's not so much that you need a community, because a community can tend to need a lot of maintenance, it needs a lot of care and nurturing, but what you need is a movement. You need to be the leader of a movement so that you are free to create without the burden of maintenance and nurturing, because that's the kind of person you are, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, some of us are born to maintain and to nurture, and other of us are born to, like, forge ahead regardless of what anyone else is doing behind us. So the trick, of course, is then to leave a trail behind us that then people can follow. And to me, that's the difference between building a community and building a movement. Either, you need either one when you're building a business. I don't think you can do it without it, but you have the choice to pick between them depending on what's really comfortable to you. So I think what really sets a movement apart is that it needs something to rally around. It needs a statement, a message, a symbol, an idea that gets people really, really excited. So just as a, for instance here, I'm very much like you, Melissa. I am a movement starter, a forger, a header, not a nurturer and maintainer. So for my own business, I'm trying to cultivate this movement around what I call the you economy. So I've got this punchy two-letter word phrase. I've got a hashtag. I've got an interview series around it. I'm working on a book proposal. All that stuff leads into that movement so that whether I'm there or not, there's an opportunity for people to be talking about this idea that I started. So that being said, what I really want to know is what message separates you from everyone else in the creativity niche? What message is it that people can really rally around, whether you're there or not?
Well, I don't yet have a two-word punchy phrase.
That's okay.
But, I mean, you said it when you introduced me. The thing that I'm really passionate about that I want to rally people around is that you using your creativity and following that passion, whatever it is will change the world, and that it's necessary. It's not this frivolous thing that needs to be, you know, shoved away in a closet. You need it. The world needs it.
Okay, I'm going to push you on that a little bit. Why does the world need it? What happens when people use their creative gifts?
Yeah, so when people don't use their creative gifts, they get stuck, and when they do use their creative gifts, Oh, man. This is good, Tara.
Good.
I can just speak from my own experience of going from a sort of low-grade state of misery to living a life where I'm really engaged, I'm really happy, and that affects everyone around me. It affects everybody in my life and everybody that I touch. And when people are doing their creative thing or things, they're able to tap into their own happiness and their own best self and bring that everywhere they go, and it creates a virtuous circle.
Okay. I like that idea of the virtuous circle. I like any kind of mission like that that has the idea of a chain reaction or a catalyst or that kind of cyclical nature to it, I think is a pretty powerful mission, because we can see that, we can visualize that, we can feel that it's not just about us, but it's about something bigger than ourselves. And I think hands down, human beings want to feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves. And so I think that a lot of coaches, a lot of creativity experts, they give off a very me message, and not in a, I think they're selfish way, but just in a way that it feels good, but how long is it going to feel good, right? And so when you can tap into this, what else happens? And as you just said, that virtuous circle, that place where you tapping into your creativity helps others tap into their creativity and so on and so forth, that gives you that sense that this isn't just about me. This is about something bigger. And I think that's really important. And so kind of moving from that to taking it one step further, in addition to a message for a movement, I like to get all of my kind of thought leadery messenger clients, to think in terms of a hypothesis. I want you to have something to prove. Because if you have something to prove, then the people around you, the people that buy into your work, that buy your products, buy your services, they're undeniably becoming part of your proof, and they are also actively working to prove it. But you have to have a clear hypothesis for that to be able to happen, okay? Mm-hmm. So, and I truly think this is one of the most effective ways you can phrase your purpose in terms of marketing and positioning. Because again, our purposes can kind of seem really out there, but when we phrase it in terms of if this, then that, it becomes a lot more tangible. So I want to know what you're trying to prove. But before, I know that's kind of like a super open-ended question, scary question. So let me give you a little context for that. As I see it, your hypothesis probably starts off a little something like this. When women exercise their creative muscles, then their families, communities, and the whole dang world blank. What do you think?
Was that blank at the end? Is that what you said?
Yeah, that was for you to fill in.
Got it. Yeah, well, I think, and it's more than just women, although most of my clients are women, but,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, to take it to its logical extreme, so I truly believe that if everybody on the planet
mm-hmm.
had the self-permission to do the thing that is calling to them, their heart's desire, calling to them to create, I truly believe that we would not have war. I mean, that's how strongly I feel about this and what I believe about it. So your statement again, then we would have, is that how it ended? Then we would have blank?
Actually, you know what? You took the same kind of structure as my statement, so let's just keep running with your statement.
Okay.
We can throw mine out and we'll use yours, because you did exactly what you needed to do. If everyone on the planet had the self-permission to create, we would not have war. Now, that's really big. So let's bring it down.
Right.
Let's bring it down into like the everyday. Not that I have a problem with you trying to end war through creativity. I think that's a pretty sick-ass idea and movement, and I am all for it and totally believe in that hypothesis. But that's not going to get people to buy, probably. So when I hear war, I think conflict, and I think there's all sorts of conflict on a day-to-day basis in our homes, in our communities, and, of course, in the world at large. So is that idea of conflict something that runs through your work and is something that you're actively trying to change?
Not as such, but I do like to bring it down to a more sort of human scale.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that when people engage with their creativity and pursue the creative expressions that call to them, it changes things so that there isn't as much conflict. A lot of times, you know, conflict it can be exacerbated or arise out of frustration, and when people are not feeding themselves, not getting what they need, then, you know, that's just ripe for frustration that will end up in conflict. You know what I mean?
Yes. Okay, cool. So let's just for the sake of an example, because you could always go back and tweak this again for yourself, because it's the process that's important, not necessarily what we specifically come up with tonight. Let's keep running with conflict and frustration, because I think those are very perceived needs. It's something that we can make very tangible. So how does conflict and frustration manifest itself in people's everyday lives?
Relationships with their family, relationships at work, with people they meet on the street. I mean, just human relationships are you know, ripe areas for conflict.
True. What about other kinds of behaviors that are related to conflict and frustration? What do we do when we're in conflict? What do we do when we're feeling frustrated? That's not positive.
We treat ourselves badly and we treat other people badly.
Love that. Well, not people treating people badly, but you know what I mean. Anything else?
Can you state that question again?
Sure. What other behaviors occur when there is conflict and frustration in our life? Or what do we do when there's conflict in our life? What do we do when we're feeling frustrated?
I'm not exactly sure what you're going for here, Tara.
Sure. So, for instance, when I'm going this direction, I'm trying to get out basically things people tell you, things your clients tell you about what's going on in their day-to-day life. So it could be, I yelled at my kids today, and I didn't mean to. It could be, I really effed up that project at work, and I feel bad about it. Or it's, I watched 3 hours of The Desperate Housewives of New Jersey last night because I just couldn't bear the thought of opening my email or talking to my husband or hanging out with my kids.
Right. Okay, so you want more examples like that?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so people, like, eat junk food and
good one.
And dive into things like wasting time on the internet or watching television, curling up in a ball and, you know, crawling into bed and just lying there instead of doing something useful or productive that might actually make you feel good. Diving into addictions of various kinds, you know, smoking or drinking or alcohol, I mean, drugs or any other kind of addiction. People tend to do, when they feel bad, they tend to do things that they think are going to make them feel better, which are often things that don't actually make them feel better.
Excellent. Yeah, yeah. So let me stop you there. That's a fantastic list. And so what you've done is gone from this kind of idealist language, which, again, I'm a total idealist. Like, I'm down with that, but it doesn't sell. So we go from this idealist language that sounds good and makes us feel good and makes us feel like we're working towards a goal for ourselves personally, and we've gone and put it in language that people can understand right now, today. And so, in effect, you're saying that when people pursue the creative expression that calls to them, they'll have better relationships with their family and with their coworkers. They'll treat themselves better, and they'll treat other people better. They'll have healthier habits because they'll have a creative outlet. They'll not waste time on TV or internet because they'll have a productive outlet. They'll be living fully engaged lives as opposed to curling up in a ball. They'll have, addictions kind of fall into healthy lifestyle. But do you see what I did with that? It's kind of moving from this big picture to a small picture that really speaks to people. Even if they're not suffering from A, B, C, or D, then E is not that far out on the list. Right? You know, they can still see themselves in those very specific behaviors. And it gives them a point to say, yes, this is where I belong, or yes, this is a mission that I can believe in, or yes, this is the way I want to heal myself and help others heal themselves. And that to me is how you really create that rally point that starts to begin a movement, and that allows you to foment a movement at the same time, giving you a place to really create effective offers from.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bring it down to the concrete.
Yeah, exactly. So on that point, let me make a really specific recommendation, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Your homepage, very busy, very busy, too much stuff going on, in my opinion. I would love to see you boil it down to this one simple message, this one simple hypothesis. If this, then that. Here's what I believe, and here's how you can join this movement. Okay? Mm-hmm. When you can get people rallying around that movement, then you'll have the type of engagement that you can build products and services into that really further the movement and get those people, get the buyers telling other people, you know, lots of word of mouth referrals, because they want to bring other people into the movement. So to me, it's not so much about, what projects to prioritize as it is about how to kind of rethink what you're moving towards so that the priorities fall into place.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Makes total sense.
Okay. So I'm watching the time, and I want to make sure that you have time to ask questions. What other questions can I answer?
I'm sorry, Tara. I'm like so nervous on this call. It's ridiculous, but
don't be nervous.
I'm not thinking of any questions. I'm just this makes so much sense to me. This is really what I'm trying to do, as you said, although I don't know that I'd put it in these terms before. I'm really trying to create a movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, I was just going to say, I think probably very much what you've been doing, which is what a lot of people do, is put things out and try and see what sticks, especially product-wise, but it could just be event-wise or marketing-wise or promotional-wise. And when you get clarity around this intention that you have to literally catalyze a movement, then instead of throwing things out in all different directions, you're throwing things all in one direction. And like I said, then the priorities start to fall into place. So if you were to say, what's my number one priority right now? To me, it would be making sure you have a foundational product that teaches people something very specific about getting in tune with the creative expression that's calling to them, because that's the first half of your hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can do that and work into that product, then a way to tell other people about what they just purchased, then you can start bringing other people into the fold. Mm-hmm. Okay?
That's great.
Excellent. All right. Well, I'm looking at the time. I think we need to wrap up. So, Melissa, thank you so much, and please keep me posted. I know you will, but definitely keep me posted on where things are going for you, okay?
I will. Thank you so much, Tara. This has really been very helpful. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you. All right. Say goodbye to Melissa, and we are moving to Corinne. Wait, Corinne, let me unmute you. There we go. Hey, Corinne.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing okay, thanks.
Good. All right, so let me introduce you to the world. Corinne Marasco is Queen of World Repair, and this was probably the favorite part of your application. Queen of World Repair, Tiara, non-negotiable.
Oh, no. Yeah,
perfect.
Always.
So at Imprimer, is that how you say it?
Imprimer, yeah.
Perfect. Consulting. Corinne works with nonprofit organizations as a consultant and grant writer to make sure the people doing good work get the funding they need to do great work. So much like Melissa, Corinne's goal for the call was to really hone in on priorities. And she was nice enough to give me this, like, super fast list of all the things she's considering working on. And I'm like, oh, I can bang that out in the list for you. And then we've got a lot to work on from there. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Cool. So I love the list that you gave me, and I'm thrilled that you're thinking about all that stuff. There's three things that you need to prioritize, and we're going to try and bang out the first two at least on the call tonight, okay?
Oh, boy.
I know. So first is the personal marketing message.
Yep.
I love that you're thinking about that. You even mentioned maybe perhaps putting that in terms of a 30-second infomercial. You got to have mm-hmm. the message, though, before you can put it in a commercial. So let's grab the message. The second
okay.
priority is going to be really identifying your ideal client, okay?
Right.
Those things are in kind of hand-in-hand. You need one before the other. You need the other before the one, you vice versa. But I have a feeling you have an okay idea of who your ideal client is, but we want to really hone in on that. And then the third, based on your message and your client, we want to create an offer. And I think mm-hmm. that if we can concentrate on those first two things tonight, the offer will start to fall into place. All the other stuff that you wrote in your list about positioning yourself as an expert and getting your blog done and this and that, those things can wait. They're not important. And I'll tell you why in just a little bit. But first, I wanted to ask you, why is grant writing important to you?
Part of it had to do with the answer that I gave you in my application was that when I started doing it, I had never done it before. And then when I was telling people what I was doing, their eyes would get really wide and they go, wow, that's really cool. I was writing grants for an organization that helps about 900 homeless and low-income women a year. Okay,
wow.
And this is in the D.C. area. We had a limited number of beds. We had an employment program. We had a day center. We had all these other programs to help them. And these are women that come with trauma histories, domestic violence histories, mental illness, drug addictions, chronic illnesses, sometimes all three. So when I would tell people that I was, you know, helping to raise money for this organization, they just thought that was the coolest thing in the world. And that's when I was like, wow, because it really filled a social justice mission for me. I'm active in my church, and I really get a charge out of doing good in the world and, shine as a light and you know, helping others who need help.
Wonderful. Love it. Love it. So that's great. Not only do you have this beautiful story around, why this became important to you or how you realized this was such a cool thing that you were doing, but you really nailed that social justice value that's important to you. I really firmly believe that businesses now need to be values-driven. Social justice is certainly one of those values that can drive a business and can get, like we were talking about with Melissa, get people to rally around you, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So from your homepage, there was a question that you posed in your little bullet points that I think needs to be the lead on your website. But before we do that, let's dive into it a little bit, okay? So the question was, what if your organization had all the funding it needs to focus on its mission? That is a marketing statement.
Okay.
That gets people thinking, well, what if I had all the funding I needed to focus on my mission? And, you know, and then immediately they've stopped thinking about funding and they've started thinking about all the amazing things they can do with this money, right? The money is already theirs. You've created already a sense of ownership for them mm-hmm. around this grant that they're going to get, around this funding that they're going to get.
Yep.
So tell me, what happens when an organization can focus on its mission and not its funding?
Well, you've taken a lot of pressure off the organization because many times nonprofit budgets, you know, they're looking at how much they can bring in through, you know, maybe they have an annual gala, maybe they have a Mother's Day fundraiser. They have all these. It's a patchwork, really, of funding sources. So, and grants are just one of them. So if you had all the money in the world that you needed to do your mission, well, then you could just concentrate and focus on what your organization is there to do.
Okay. And so tell me a little bit more about that doing. Like what are some of the results that grants you've written have created for organizations? Like what have organizations been able to do because you were able to help them secure the funding that they needed?
They've been able to help women find jobs. They've been able to help women get training. They've been able to feed women daily. The day center that we had was open 365 days a year, and women could get breakfast and lunch. So we were able to keep people fed in the bad weather. They came, they had a place to go. We had showers. We had a clothes closet. We had so much to offer.
Wonderful. Great. Those are great results. And those are the kind of things that people are thinking, or that the people who are leading these organizations or who are maybe looking for contractors around grant writing and fundraising are these are their priorities. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the bias or the worldview of the person who is leading the organization is not towards, oh, I need to get $10,000. It's I need to get $10,000 so that I can feed how many women for how many weeks.
Right.
It's I can, you know, with that amount of money, I can do this. You know, they're very biased towards action, and so you calling out actions that they can take towards their mission will help them understand the true value of the service that you're offering.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
I want you to really think about those kind of results when you're thinking about your marketing message. How
okay.
can you position yourself in terms of actions organizations can take? And as I said, lead with that question. What if your organization had all the funding it needs to focus on its mission? It's a brilliant question. You probably don't even need the rest of the questions on your homepage.
Okay.
And let me tell you something else. You don't need the big welcome word.
Yeah.
this was something
yeah.
that I wanted to say for everyone on the call. Welcome is the most overused word on websites. You don't need it. It's wasted space. I mean, that is essentially what you're doing there. It's wasted space. Instead,
okay.
in big letters, you could have that great question that gets the right people thinking about what kind of actions they could be taking if they weren't worried all day about fundraising.
Okay.
Or grant writing. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, I've been teaching myself WordPress, so...
Excellent, excellent. Well, all you need to do is go into that page and change the title to that question. I wouldn't worry about anything else.
Okay.
Okay, that easy. All right, where did I want to go there? Okay, so now that's your marketing message. The marketing message is that question plus those results. Your ideal client, let's talk about that.
Okay.
Who do you really want to be serving nonprofit organization-wise?
Are you talking about the types of organizations or what?
It could be anything. Let's start with types of organizations.
Well, the organizations that I've had experience with have been the organization that helped homeless women and a small all-girls Catholic school in Baltimore. So they're small nonprofits. Right now, you know, they probably have a budget of less than $3 million a year, probably even smaller than that. And that's about as far as I've gotten because I've been wrestling with, and I think Abby Kerr addressed this, is, you know, don't make it so broad that it's meaningless, but don't make it so narrow that, you know, you're serving such a small subset of the population that it's frustrating. So
yeah,
that's where I'm stuck.
I agree and disagree with that. I think the vast majority of people could use some narrowing in who they serve.
Okay.
And that we, just by the nature of the way we think, tend to go more broad with our ideal client descriptions. If I were you, so normally I ask people to come up with a single ideal client, one person that's going to purchase for them. That's when they close their eyes, that's the person they imagine buying their jewelry, buying their services, whatever. I'm going to ask you to create two different ideal clients. One is going to be an imaginary organization that would be your dream contract, okay? I want to know what their mission is. I want to know what their budget is. I want to know where they're located, who they serve, what kind of programs they have, what kind of other fundraising they do. I want to know the work, okay? I almost want to know, like, what the business plan is for this nonprofit, okay?
Oh, holy crap.
I know. It's hard, but it's fun. And start with what you know. That's going to be the easiest thing. You've worked for organizations that you've enjoyed working for before, so start with them. What did you like about them? What didn't you like about them? And where could you go from there?
Right.
The other thing I'm going to ask you to do is come up with an ideal profile for the person that's the decision maker, okay? Mm-hmm. Because they're, you know, yes, there may be committees. Yes, there may be boards that need to make a final say. But in the end, there's that one person that's out there looking, that's making the referrals, that's giving the board the leads or the, you know, the bios for the people that could be doing this job. And you want to know that person inside and out as well, because he or she is going to be your biggest advocate when it comes to nailing these contracts. So you need to know who that person is too. Now, there's probably a lot more wiggle room in that profile than there would be in the average ideal client avatar.
Right.
But I still think that you can nail what their values are. You can nail, probably even the kind of house they live in and what kind of family they have. And, so, you know what? Maybe it's not any more broad. You can probably still nail what kind of TV shows they watch and what kind of magazines they read. That's the kind of information you need to have on this person. Okay?
Okay,
and again, start with what you know. Who is that decision maker at the organizations that you've worked with and really enjoyed before? And what kind of information can then you extrapolate out from that?
Okay.
Any questions about creating those ideal client avatars?
Just on the second one, the decision maker, depending on the organization, the decision maker may vary from, if it's really teeny tiny, it might be the executive director. If it's a little bit larger, it might be a director of programs. It might be a director of development. It might be the executive director as well. So, I'm not quite sure who I should zero in on.
This is a case where I'm just going to say go with your gut.
Okay.
It matters, but it doesn't matter that much. What matters more is that you're trying to get in their head and understand how they see the process, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, the agenda of an executive director might be slightly different than a director of fundraising or a director of programming, but in the end, they're probably making decisions in much the same way, and that's really where I want you to get. And all that other information about where they live and what kind of TV shows they watch, believe it or not, it helps you create an intuitive understanding of how they see the world and how they see their job. Okay?
Okay.
So that's step two. Wow, we covered that stuff pretty fast. So let's talk about, you know what?
What?
I'm going to leave the create the offer up to you. That was the third thing on your list. I'm going to leave to you. Because since this is something that's not new to you, you have something that's a fantastic resource, and that's connection. So from here, I want you to use your connections. I want you to turn cold leads into hot leads. I want you to email your friends and your old clients and ask for referrals. Generate an amount of work right now that makes you feel comfortable before you start worrying about other promotional tactics and positioning, like all the stuff about the blogging and all the stuff about Twitter or positioning yourself as an expert. Don't worry about that until you've got work that makes you feel comfortable financially, okay? So use those connections and get that accomplished. That's going to get you on the right foot and feeling really good about doing everything else. Once you have that work, I want you to make sure that you're gathering testimonials and more leads from that work. Mm-hmm. Make sure that part of your process is always saying, can you recommend me to two other people in this field? Can you recommend me to someone else you know who's looking for grant writing or someone else you know who would love to take the same kind of actions that you've taken because of the funding that you've received? And then also grab their testimonials, even if it's one or two lines. You want people to say, Corinne did this for our business, and it allowed us to do this, okay? So I would make it really tangible, really straightforward. Those are the kind of testimonials you want. All that stuff, plus, I want you to make sure your clients know that you're available for interviews or information or speaking, if you want to do that, on this topic, and because that's what's going to position you as an expert. But the best way to get that kind of positioning is to do the work, hence why I want you to use your connections to get more work right now, okay? That way the positioning really comes very naturally because you're going to have the intention to have that kind of expert positioning, but you're not going to be just kind of throwing darts at a board for that positioning. You're going to be working towards that position with intention.
Okay.
Okay? Does that make sense?
I think so.
All right.
Okay. I'm just taking notes.
Sure. Okay. So the last thing that you had on your application and in your email was that you were wondering about what kind of product you could offer, because we had talked briefly in another chat about this last week. You mentioned that there's plenty of resources on grant writing. And I said, well, yeah, but none of them are written by you.
Right.
So I want you to be thinking about what makes your approach to grant writing unique. It doesn't have to be a unique solution. It doesn't have to be a unique need that you're solving or addressing. It has to have your unique perspective on it, okay? So what about your approach to grant writing is unique? Is it your process, your personality, your philosophy? Is it who you work with or what you're trying to accomplish? Do you have, like, just real super quick, because we're running out of time, do you have maybe an indication of what that unique thing might be?
No, I don't. I mean, here's the thing about grant writing. It's very structured. You don't get a whole lot of opportunity to tell a story because the funder has specific requirements for how they want you to submit your information. The other thing about grant writing is it's a lot like playing the lottery. You don't know if it's going to get funded. I mean, it's much in the same way that I go to Giant and get a lottery ticket. You don't know because those decisions are out of the grant writer's hands. So then you start thinking, well, you know, what's left to talk about? And that's where I kept getting hung up about what was unique about grant writing.
Sure. Okay, great. So what I'm hearing from you then is that since the process of grant writing itself is so straightforward, that probably where the problems and the perceived need actually comes from is in the management process. How do you manage the grant writing process? And that is probably something you have a unique perspective on. At the least, you have unique experiences of that.
Right.
So how have you managed that process? How have you managed the uncertainty of the grant writing process? How have you managed writing enough proposals to kind of feel confident about getting the right amount of funding?
Okay.
Does that make sense? Okay. Real quick, any other questions that I can answer for you or anything that you'd like some more information on?
No, I'm processing everything that we've talked about so far, and you'll probably at some point get an email with a whole list of questions from me after this.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. All right. Well, Corinne, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Tara.
All right. So now we're saying goodbye to Corinne. And finally, waiting in the wings, we've got Kristen. Hey, Kristen.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm great, thanks.
Excellent. All right. Let me introduce you to everyone. Kristen is Chief Trust Tender at KristenNoel.com. Kristen is empowering people to evolve beyond acting on fear and act, feel, and make decisions from a higher state of consciousness. I love that. I love higher states of consciousness. And her goal for the call today was to create a plan for solidifying her position as a thought leader, to start a movement, very much like Melissa's, which is an excellent goal to have. So just like we talked about with Melissa, we need a solid hypothesis and we need solid results. So that's where we're going to start. Does that sound good to you?
Sure.
Okay, cool. So the thing about your whole branding around the concept of trust is that I don't think it's something that a lot of people go around saying, you know, what I need in my life is more trust, right? That may be the thing that you realize they need. That might be the heart of your movement, but it's not the expected answer to the perceived need, okay? So there's a misalignment there between what you have to offer, product or service-wise, and what people are really feeling. They understand that when you talk about trust, they feel better, but they haven't connected that yet to the real everyday problems, the real everyday difficulties or deficiencies that they have. So the hypothesis kind of structure that I came up for you is when your life is full of trust, you blank, and that results in blank for others. So that's what I'd like you to fill in. When your life is full of trust, you have more this, more that, you do this differently, and that results in this or that or another thing for others. Can you want to riff on that a little bit with me?
Sure. So I think you relax enough to be able to stand in a greater sense of power and clarity. I think the more fear that you're acting out of, the more muddled things become and the more your sort of ego needs get kind of overshadow maybe what your greater goals are. And I guess goals can really be across the board. I mean, it can have to do with business or private life or really anything that you want to do.
Okay.
Can you say the hypothesis again, the wording of that?
Sure. And we don't have to stick with that, just like we didn't stick with Melissa's, but the starting point, when your life is full of trust, you blank, and that results in blank for others.
Yeah, so, yeah, I think you can relax into your power, which sounds like an oxymoron a little bit, but I think you can relax into your power and tap into that. And that results in, I feel like the effects of fear are so pervasive in every domain of life that, it's hard for me to even, I could list a whole bunch of things. I mean, I think it results in less patriarchy, less misogyny, less violence on every level, less depression, less self-defeating patterns. Relationships change. This all sounds so general, doesn't it?
It does, but that's my job, is to make you be more specific. So I was just waiting for a break. Okay, cool. So I think you're on the right track with that. And what I want to do is turn these more general statements into behaviors. Okay. So what is a self-defeating pattern?
Having a dream and finding reasons to not pursue it.
Oh, I love that one. Okay, give me another one.
Really wanting love, and what would you do to sabotage yourself in that? Feeling like I can't pursue that until fill in the blank, until I lose this weight, until I, you know, get this X amount of therapy, until I whatever. Wanting that promotion and psyching yourself out of doing some of the tasks that you know that you can do, because maybe, I don't know, if you have a story around why you shouldn't get that promotion or whatever.
Beautiful. Okay, those three, perfect. Beautiful. Good job. Feel really good about that. Those are things people can say, oh, yeah, I did that, or, oh, yeah, I'm doing that right now. And when people can say that about a pain point, it's not that you're, like, stepping on the wound. It's that you're acknowledging it. It's that you're saying, here, I am holding space for the problems that you're currently feeling because I understand them. I'm aware of them. I've done them myself, maybe. And people want to be witnessed and acknowledged in that way. And so honing in on what those actual behaviors are gives people that sense of acknowledgement without stepping on it. You know, we're not saying, oh, you're such a terrible person because you've got this dream and you haven't pursued it. We're saying something quite the opposite. We're just acknowledging it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what's the opposite of that? As you said, we relax into our power, but that's part of the trust process. So what does that look like? And you can use the exact opposites of the things that you just said, or you can give me a whole new list.
Yeah, so I think being able to recognize the value of where you are and who you are and what you've experienced already, recognizing that in those things there's wisdom and there's direction for you, for the things that you want to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of us have so much more more in us than we often give ourselves credit for. So relaxing, so when you're in a state of fear, you're just not able to acknowledge that. You feel like there's a scarcity of something that you need. And so when you're relaxing into your power, you have that clarity to recognize what's there for you and to use that, to make use of it.
Beautiful.
Do you talk more?
No, that's good. That's good. That's great. So those are really specific behaviors then. Now talk to me about how trust is the kind of transformative element here. How does trust make you go from having a dream and finding reasons not to pursue it to being able to relax and acknowledge that we have what we need to pursue that dream?
I think it's a bridge. I think it's a bridge between what there is that's solid to stand on, like what the experiences that you have had, the knowledge that you do have, the intuitions that you're aware of or can become aware of. So there's a bridge between that, those more solid things,
okay,
and the unknown. And I think the unknown, if you're in a state of fear, that becomes a big red or big danger flag that your you know, lizard brain says stay away from that, avoid that, and creates all kinds of subconscious moves to try to keep you from that. And I think trust can become a bridge that you feel like you can walk on to get into that unknown, that because the unknown also has all the things that you're wanting and wanting to pursue and maybe keeping yourself from pursuing.
Beautiful. I love it. That's a great explanation, I think. And I think it actually, it does really hone in on maybe some subconscious worries that people have. Like maybe it's not necessarily the language that they would use. And so I would really encourage you to talk to maybe clients that you've had in the past to find out what kind of language or what kind of internal monologue they had for themselves before they started working with you around this idea of the unknown. Fear of the unknown, uncertainty, not being able to see what's on the other side of their big goal, their big dream, and what kind of things that was bringing up for them. Because they probably have similar language around it, and it may be something that you, as someone who is living in trust and living in your power and clarity, are a little out of touch with right now. And that's fine. That's good. I mean, I want you to be out of touch with that because that means you're living what you're doing, right? But that's why we need to talk to past customers or talk to maybe people who are working with us right now and find out, well, what was going on for you right as you were deciding that this was the type of service, this was the type of coaching that you needed, okay?
And you're saying to contrast maybe what their answer would be with the actual language of trust. Is that what you're saying? Because are you trying to get at like that the language of trust isn't quite what you think they would be thinking about?
Right. I think there's a disconnection between the language that you're using now and the language that your customers use or the pain that they feel, okay? And that doesn't mean you can't use your language, but it does mean you need to figure out, like, where they overlap and how you can kind of go from one and bridge them over to the other. And that's a learning process, and that's actually part of building the momentum behind your movement, is giving them a starting place that's very much in the way they talk to themselves or to other people, and then gently guiding them through so that they can talk in a shared language with you. That gives people a sense of community and a sense of connection with other people. Does that make sense? Okay. All right, great. And so then I would just continue to work on that kind of hypothesis idea. When your life is full of trust, you are more blank. Or when your life is full of trust, you can show up like this in the world. But just like what we did with Melissa, I very much want your hypothesis to be not just about an individual person, but really what kind of chain reaction you're starting with your work, because, you know, your truth or trust coaching doesn't stop at the individual that you are coaching. Your products aren't going to stop at the people who buy it. You want them to ripple out to other people. And so by kind of crafting a hypothesis that points to that bigger purpose, that points to that chain reaction, you can create that sense for people that they're buying into something bigger. Okay? Awesome. Okay. So along the same lines, what do you think it is that I'm going to push you a little bit further on this, or on this kind of topic of language and understanding what people's needs are. What do you think? What do people think they need when you really know it's trust? Like, in your brain, you hear something and you go, bing, 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 that's a trust problem, or you don't have enough trust in your life. But what are they really saying? So what do people what do people think they need when you recognize it as a trust issue?
Right. That's a great question. One thing that comes to mind is courage. I think courage comes out of trust, but I don't think it's the root of what people need. I think trust starts is more of the at the heart. Self-confidence, I think people often think of. And again, I think trust is below that, like a layer beneath that. I think any of the sort of, I guess I'm thinking of some of the external, like physical things people feel like they want to change about themselves. I think trust is would be more at heart.
Sure, give me a couple of those.
Feeling like they need to be a different weight than they are, a different shape than they are. You know, some of those physical things. Things that people might want to change about their personality or about the way that they present themselves in the world. You know, like if you think about, I want to take classes in how to speak. I want to, whatever. Like, I think trust would be the starting point. Like in my mind, I feel like, this work of tending trust is like the step one of so many other things. It feels like the real foundational work that, like, once you start to get this in order, then so many other things can then happen, and so many other of the, like, self-help kinds of things people would pursue would actually work and stick when you have this base of understanding trust is really what where I need to start.
Okay. I think that's a great thing to be aware of for you, is that you believe trust is foundational to helping other people use the information and wisdom that's elsewhere on the market, you know?
Yes, what I think.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a message that you can really communicate. But I want you to communicate it in the terms that you just kind of outlined. Courage, self-confidence. That's what people understand, because that's what either they've been told by somebody else that they need, or, you know, that's just kind of the societal message that they've been getting probably for 20, 30, 40 years. Oh, if only I had more courage. Oh, if only I had more self-confidence. You, Kristen, can know that it's a trust issue. But you talk to them in terms of courage and self-confidence. And so then when you go to create a program or a course where you're asking people to kind of come together around a particular problem, you're asking them to come together around a particular problem, not the solution that you're going to give them, okay? The solution that you're going to give them is trust. And you don't have to, hide that. You don't have to apologize for it. But that solution isn't actually what solves the problem or what gets the sale. The solution isn't
okay.
necessarily why people buy. But people buy because they get that you understand their problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So you had written in your application that you had done a survey, which, excellent, thank you for doing a survey of your people, that people had said that they were possibly interested in purchasing a short-term, not-so-intensive course from you, but you really had this dream of creating a much bigger program. Mm-hmm. I think that this is a result not of them not wanting to spend money with you, but of them not actually understanding what it is that you have to offer them. And it's mm-hmm. because you're talking to them in your language as opposed to meeting them where they're at right now.
That's great. That's very incisive. That's good.
Okay, excellent. Good. So that's what I want you to really work on. And I think we're about out of time for our 20 minutes. But that is the point of convergence for you. That's where things are going to start happening. When you can meet your clients and customers and potential customers where they're at, you can bring them along with you as you move them into understanding that the solution and the foundation of everything that they've wanted lies in trust.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So to be super duper clear, are not suggesting like a whole rebranding. You're suggesting like that trust tending can, since it is trust at the heart, that makes sense, but it's just the language that I use to talk about it and communicate it.
Exactly. No, okay. I don't think it requires a whole rebranding. I think your branding is beautiful and smart and clear, but when you try and grab people's attention, I want you to grab their attention with problems and language and behaviors that really resonate with them, and then bring them along in a journey to where they understand this language and idea of trust. And then there's a whole other branch to your business then that can happen over there when you have this group of customers who have made this journey with you. And then there's retreats, then there's mastermind groups, then there's high-level one-on-one coaching. But you've got to bring your people from where they are now to where you want to go. Okay?
Excellent. Right. Thank you very much.
Right. You are so welcome, Kristen. Thank you so much for applying and volunteering. I really appreciate it.
Oh, glad to be here.
Awesome. All right. So without further ado, it is question time. And to ask a question, and we've got time for two questions, so one, two, tonight, to win a copy of the $100 Startup by my buddy Chris Gilbo, you need to raise your hand. To raise your hand, you press *2. So if you've got a question, hit *2. And while I'm waiting for people to raise their hands, I just want to let you know that Insight Intensives are now available to everyone. This is not a hard sell pitch or offer. This is just me letting you know that if you've enjoyed this experience over the last 3 days, I am making these available. It's a 75-minute call with me, and it's a business throwdown, just like you've seen over the last 3 days with these 9 different business owners. It's me unloading as much insight as I possibly can onto you for 75 minutes or more, because I tend to always go over. And that's a $500 investment. You can find out more information at terragentile.com/insight-intensive. SurgeonTilly.com/insight-intensive. All right. And without further ado, let's get to those questions. The first one I'm going to, let's be in Texas. Last 4 digits of your phone number are 0968. Hello, who's this?
Hello, this is Julia McPherson.
Hey, Julia, how are you?
I'm doing fine. My business is called Interspace Marketing, and I just started in January. I was wondering what your best advice was for a brand new consultant. Should I concentrate on identifying that ideal client or productizing services, or getting testimonials. I only have 3 clients right now, so I'm working on those case studies to get to get the testimonials.
Yeah. So I think definitely honing in on your ideal client is probably of utmost importance to you at this point. And that you can also do through a process that's going to get you more testimonials, and that is to work for free. Now, you guys, everyone on the call knows that I like making money and telling everyone to make money. But I think that there's a lot of value in working for free as well, especially at the beginning of a business. You need to get experience. You need to understand how you work with people. You need to understand what the true value it is that you're providing to people. And it helps you fill out that ideal client information. It gives you a much more vibrant picture of who you would really love to be working with, who lets you do your very best work.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. So what you need to do to get your free book is email general@terragentilly.com and send us your mailing address and we'll send you your book. All right?
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Thank you. All right, and I've got time for one more question and a copy of the $100 Startup. Go ahead and hit star 2 if you have a question. Come on, guys. Hit star 2 if you've got a question. There we go. All right, this is, looks like Ottawa. Phone number ends in 1801.
Hi, it's Stephanie.
Hey, Stephanie, how are you?
Not bad. How are you doing, Tara?
I'm great.
Good. You mentioned, and I'm flipping through my notes, a foundational product. I'm trying to find the exact words to sort of fulfill the first half of the hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
To teach folks sort of and sort of, I guess, move them through the hypothesis. I'm wondering if you can expand on that a little bit.
Sure. So I think that a great product for everyone to have, or every kind of idea-based business, definitely for coaches, probably for marketing businesses, any kind of business that's based around an idea or a service-based business. It's really important to have this kind of foundational product that teaches people something that they need to know to go further with you, okay? So it can be related to the hypothesis, like I did with Melissa, where you're teaching people that key something or other, you know, whatever it is. So let me give you the example from my own business. Part of my hypothesis and part of what my big reason for being is helping people make money, right? But what I realized in working with clients is that before we could get through building a product, building a program, talking about coaching off services options or pricing, you know, handmade goods, we had to get through a money issue. And the money issues just got so murky and crazy that we got stuck. So I said, well, I can fix this, right? I can write about this. I can put this all in one place so I don't have to deal with this again, at least in the same way. So that's when I wrote The Art of Earning.
Mm-hmm.
So The Art of Earning is my foundational product. It gives people straightforward entrance into my brand, my philosophy, my hypothesis, and basically says, you know, making money is beautiful, and making money doing what you love is more than possible. It's the way of the future. All right. So I'm trying to get everyone past their money issues in this one product. At the same time, it's bringing in revenue for me. I didn't realize quite how much revenue it was going to bring in, but that's a happy little surprise. And it's generating leads all the time. It makes people want to work with me one-on-one because they get my philosophy and they really buy into it, and that makes them want to work with me more. And then it also generates leads for other programs that I do, or it generates leads for interviews and guest posting and PR opportunities. So it's been just a great entryway product into my business. And so that's the kind of thing I would encourage any idea of movement-based business to have. Product-based businesses have gateway products or foundational products as well, just in a different context. But yeah, for these for idea-based businesses to have that foundational product that sets people up and does solve a problem. Like it has to solve a problem or present present a solution to a question or a need, but it also gives them that introduction into what your core philosophy is. Okay?
Okay. That's wonderful.
Does that
Thank
answer
you.
Your question?
It, absolutely, it does. Thanks very much, Tara.
Okay, perfect. You're so welcome. So to get your book then, just email general@taragentile.com with your mailing address, and I'll send your book your way, okay?
Wonderful.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, guys, and with that, that is going to be the end of our Insight Intensive calls, guys. It has been a whirlwind 3 days, and I'm so glad that you have stuck it out or have listened to the recordings. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I look forward to catching up with you on Twitter in just a minute. And like I said, the one-on-one private insight intensives are available now at taragentile.com/insight-intensive. I will see you on the interwebs. Thanks so much, guys. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye.